No matter the industry, leaders need to hold these things dear. Who we serve, how we serve, why we serve. This is People, Process, Service, a Frontline Source Group podcast.
All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of People, Process, Service. I'm Tyler Kern. Bill Casco is here.
Hello, Tyler. Always. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you, Bill?
I'm fantastic.
Hey, happy anniversary.
Thank you very much.
Can we talk about that on the podcast?
We can talk about it for a moment.
Okay. Well, congratulations.
Thank you. I'm working towards 20. Well, I'm almost 27. That's what I'm working towards. Every year, working to the next.
Nice, nice. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
There's a, I mean, you kind of came up with the concept, you know, people process service, and kind of realized that, and like, relationships in your marriage is kind of a part of that, right?
That's a whole podcast, I bet.
Yeah,
you know,
I
just
bet.
Talking about how that happened probably relates back to it, to tell you the truth, when it's all done. But
yeah,
it is. It's all about that. And today, excited about our guest.
Absolutely, I'm really excited. Today's guest, Kyle Noonan, CEO of Free Range Concepts. Kyle, thank you so much for joining us today.
I'm excited.
Well, we're excited to have you. This is really fun. Free Range Concept, Concepts. They own The Rustic. They own Mutz. They own Bowl and Barrel. And I'm sure I'm missing other things, but you guys are prolific in what you do.
I've been called a lot of things. Prolific is this is the first time I've been called prolific, so thank you. Yeah, we've been busy bees. We have now 12 units, mm-hmm, throughout Texas, four different brands, and our company is a little over 6.5 years old.
Really?
So we've been hustling.
Was the Rustic the first one?
I'll just go ahead and tell you our story.
That's fantastic.
Kind of the quick little story.
Yep.
So I was an art major at SMU, and I got paired to room with this finance major, and we were 18 years old. We were just could not be more different. We were the odd couple, but we became fast friends. We became best friends. He and I ended up running our fraternity together. He was the president and in charge of finances, and I was the social chair. We had been friends for the better part of 20 years, even though after college we went our own separate ways professionally. We always kind of knew we wanted to do something together. And one day he called me up and said, "Hey, do you want to go? You want to go hang out tonight?" And I said, "Sure." And he said, "Well, how about we go bowling?" And I was like, "Bowling? I haven't been bowling since I was like at a 12-year-old birthday party." And I was 12 years old.
Thanks for the clarification.
And so we were like, "Well, where do we go bowling?" And we quickly realized that there was no bowling alleys near where we lived. We lived in the Highland Park, SMU area. And so we were like, "Well, maybe that's an opportunity for us to start a business." So we hired a consultant and tried to really understand the bowling industry, because neither of us had any experience in bowling. And we spent about a year putting together a business plan, which later became Bowl and Barrel, which is we opened in 2012 right by North Park Mall. And that was our first business. 6 months later, we opened a concept called Mutz Canine Cantina, which is a full service restaurant and bar that overlooks a private membership based dog park. So the dogs are paying monthly members, and it's a place that you can go and let your dogs run around while you have a glass of wine under an oak tree. And we have bark rangers that clean up after the dogs, so you don't have to mess with the dirty stuff. And so that was our next concept. Our third concept was the Rustic.
Okay.
We opened that 3 months after we opened Mutz. And the Rustic, if you haven't been, is a full-service restaurant and bar that overlooks a 3,000-person outdoor concert venue. And so within a 9-month period, we opened three large-scale, very different businesses. And we didn't time it that way. We didn't.
Right.
We were actually kind of not wanting to do it that quickly, but just how things go sometimes in business, you just got to roll with the punches, and that's the way it lined up. So we did it, and it was hard. We didn't do it very well, frankly, you know, starting out. So it took us some time to kind of get our sea legs, so to speak. And then, you know, here we are 6.5 years later, and they're all doing better than ever. So it's good that that we figured it out at some point along the way.
So you know, talk about the people, right? You talk about your roommate and the people and everything. So my first question in doing all my research to understand this, which I'm just kind of blown away still even hearing, because that's a lot to do at one time, right? And this is just straight up question for you. How did you get Pat fucking Green to be a part of it? And I only say that because that's what, you know, you guys don't know Pat Green, that's his name. So how did you, what happened there with that person?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that one of the secrets to success generally is storytelling. And I think it's whether you're talking to your team, whether you're talking to your customer, whether you're talking to investors, if you're good at storytelling, you're going to do pretty well. And the reason why I'm saying that is my best friend, my business partner, Josh, he had he was getting married and I was his best man. And we had, I had two bachelor parties to plan, one for his kind of SMU group of friends and one for his Oklahoma friends where he was from. So SMU friends, we did the typical Miami, you know, flashy kind of bachelor party. And then the Oklahoma friends, we did kind of a down home ranch. Right. We went out to the Texas Hill Country. We were grilling steaks over an open flame and drinking beer and listening to music and just, you know, kind of being guys out in nature. And
by the way, I never had a bachelor party like either one of us. Just going to go on the record and say, okay.
My bachelor party was at Benihana's because I got married when I was 22 years old. So
mine was, I can't even say on here what mine really ended up being, except a lot of people got in trouble, but yeah.
Exactly. Well, there you go. That's another podcast.
Yeah, that's a whole other one, yeah.
I went to Snuffers.
Yeah. There you go. Okay, so you feel it. Yeah. But anyway, so Pat was on that bachelor party.
Oh, wow.
He was a friend of a friend originally and became kind of a close enough friend to where he got invited to that trip. And, you know, we just started talking about and storytelling about our experience after we on the way back home after the bachelor party, and just started talking about what if we created that experience, could bottle that, you know, live fire and cold beer and stars and oak tree and music. And what if we could bottle that and do a restaurant and roll it out? And so I was telling Pat this idea and he fell in love with it. And
that's awesome.
And the rest is history, as they say.
And that's what it is when it comes down to these people that you just never know.
Yeah, you don't. In fact, I'll tell you another quick story. Where we're located in Dallas, our original Rustic is on what used to be called the Hank Haney Driving Range.
Right, right.
For those of you that live in Dallas, you probably remember it. And I read a story in the Dallas Morning News that they were looking for something else to do there. They were going to get rid of the driving range. It had been there for about 20 years, and they were ready to kind of revamp that site. And I talked to my partner, and I said, what if we reached out to him and whoever the landlord was, and pitched our idea,
right,
to do Mutt's and the Rustic? And my partner was like, nope, no way, land's too expensive, not going to work. Well, my partner, my partner is generally the one that's right between the two of us. He's the smarter one. But occasionally I can sneak in a win. And he went out of town. So I just decided to go and meet with the landlord on my own. And I told the landlord the story of both Mutt's and the Rustic. And I thought there was zero chance that he was going to say yes. And but he did. He was like, I love this. This is the perfect use for it. Done. So when my partner came back, I was like, ha, ha, ha. and then that was the last win I've had against him. He's been right since.
So you guys went Dallas, Houston, San Antonio. And looking at all these locations, you got the same basic three cities. It kind of reminds me of the Southwest Airlines.
Yes.
Kind of thing. And I'm thinking this happened on a napkin somewhere that came to that idea. So there's no Austin, though. And you think about the restaurant side and Austin restaurants, and I don't know why I always do, but I always think about it like that. Are you on purpose staying away from Austin, or is it just you're not interested? It's too weird.
So, I mean, disclaimer: I love Austin. I think Austin's a fun time to go hang out, go get away for the weekend. We did look at. It's funny you brought up Southwest. We actually looked at that model. One of our thoughts early on was we were going to go expand outside of Texas really quickly. You know, we got Dallas, now let's go prove it in other states. And I was talking to Pat Green, and his whole model was, and he's known as a Texas country artist.
Exactly. Right.
His whole model is, you know what, if I can kill it in Texas, Texas is a huge market and I can do just fine. I mean, when you look at it, Texas is, you know, what is it? I think the eighth largest economy in the world, if it was its own country. So we kind of took a step back and we're like, that seems a lot more manageable. Like, let's just try and go own Texas. And then once we do that, then we can start worrying about breaking the Texas borders. And so we looked at largest population bases, Dallas, Houston, San Antonio. Those seemed obvious. Most economically friendly, Dallas, San Antonio, Houston. You know, least amount of competition in our spaces, Dallas, San Antonio, Houston. So we kind of thought, why are we looking in Austin? Because we kept trying to go to Austin, thinking that that's what we needed to do because that's what all the cool kids are doing.
Right.
But after we kind of studied it and spent a lot of time there, it was like, it's a lot easier to do it in a much bigger and much more affordable market than Austin.
Right.
So not saying we won't go to Austin. In fact, we are going to Austin with our Mutz brand. You know.
And that makes sense. I can see that in Austin.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It'd be fantastic.
But when you talk about, like, for the Rustic, everybody always kind of, that's their first instinct. Don't you have one in Austin, the Rustic? It's live music. It's, you know, Texas. It's, there's a lot of live music in Austin.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. It's kind of like the restaurant side, too. I mean, your competition is so strong, and it's difficult margin-wise and everything else as it is. And then in Austin, I guess you have a lot of – there's so much more regulation for anything that you want to do there.
Certainly.
That it adds extra on top of that. And,
yeah.
And I think you're probably right. It's probably just the specialty item that fits perfect. And the Mutz, I think, would be fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Austin's the pretty girl in the bar, but she has a lot of issues and maybe kind of
a lot of baggage.
Has some daddy issues and is kind of angry and maybe hates men. You know, she's that. So. So, you know, that's kind of how we feel about
it. I never thought about it like that, but he might be right. I don't know. So you do all of this and you're growing, but you've got to have the right people then to back you, to run this. I mean, and you jump in here. What was the next step? I mean, you hired some consultants. It sounds like most likely you guys are smart enough to know that. And
yeah, I mean, so in a past life, I ran a company called Pappas Restaurants, so Papado, Papacitos, Pappas Brothers Steakhouse.
Yep.
I was able to cut my teeth with an organization that really understood organizational structure on the hospitality side, and so I had, fortunately for me, I had kind of a playbook to go off of and to see how to structure from a personnel standpoint. That coupled with the fact that I was reading a book, and the name escapes me. It was by Jocko, the ex-Marine.
Which one?
Extreme Ownership is what it's called. And they were talking about how the military structures their personnel, and they the military believes that you really can't effectively manage any more than 10 people. 6 to 8 is kind of the ideal amount of people that you can manage. So the way they do it is the top guy manages, you know, 8, then those 8 manage 8, then, you know, and then it spreads on down. And so we tried to build our structure from that standpoint. There were a few choices we had to make as a smaller business growing. Do we base it off of market? So in other words, do we have a person in San Antonio, a person in Dallas, a person in Houston, or do we do it based off of brand? Do we have our, you know, a person that's in charge of one brand or another brand? We ultimately chose market, and it was just a matter of practicality for us because travel is expensive.
Right, right.
And if we had everybody based in Dallas, and they were on the road five, 6 days a week.
Got the company jet.
Yeah, not yet. So, you know, that's the way we structured it. We just said, okay, we're going to be in these markets. We have multiple units in each market. Let's start building teams out within the market.
So you jumped into it already understanding that the restaurant industry and business,
yes,
which was huge, because just understanding that would be mind-boggling to all of a sudden undertake something like this from just a guy walking
sure
in the door.
Sure.
I mean, you had to have some process then that you set up.
We did. We did. Fortunately, my background, I understood organizational process, but I also understood operational process. I had the benefit of working for a company and learning from a company that had been doing it for 3 decades. We got to start, you know, with the systems in place from day one that it took them 30 years to build. So that was a huge leg up for us. I fortunately was able to bring on early several top level talent individuals to help us that either had a connection to the organization I used to run or actually used to work for that organization at one point, so they understood the language and the mechanics and the process. So bringing top level people in from day one that all spoke the same language and were wired the same way,
right,
that helped us a lot.
Right.
It was costly, and it meant I didn't make any money for the first several years,
right,
because I was paying top level people before we needed them.
Right.
Technically, based on our sales, we didn't need them. But based off of where we were going and what we were trying to do, we needed them.
But bringing people in that are smarter than you, that understand
absolutely
it, and suffering through that sometimes, mm-hmm, is difficult too, because you talked about opening up all of these locations at one time. I mean, that's a lot. You're stretched really thin.
Yes.
Trying to do. I mean, I feel stretched thin sometimes just doing what I do every day.
Certainly.
Let alone
certainly
trying to figure out, you got menus, you've got signage, you've got locations, the construction permits. I mean, that is a let alone talking about funding and financing.
Yeah. Yeah.
That you've got a lot of hair. Okay. I mean, this guy's got hair, guys. I mean, guy over here.
Like, I grew up myself
this,
too.
This stuff, I grow mine too, but it's falling out and it's not all my daughter's fault. And so, I mean, the stress is crazy that people don't understand.
It is. It is. Now, I will say, again, early on, I looked at my partner, and we were kind of the bottleneck early on, just because we didn't have a big enough team yet, and decisions weren't made as quick as they needed to be. And, you know, so I looked at my partner and I said, I don't want to be the single point of failure in this organization. And I knew he didn't either. So we just started saying, let's start building the team early. And so that's helped a lot. That's helped the stress level. That's helped our success. I mean, certainly. So I think that's something that you don't necessarily want to spend the money on early on.
Right, right.
But if you can make the sacrifices and live skinny,
yeah,
it's worth it. It pays for itself.
And day to day right now, what is your position day to day, or what are you doing day to day with the businesses?
So the way we kind of divide and conquer, my partner and I, and really one of the reasons why we're successful as a partnership, because most people say don't get in business with your partner, with your friend, or right, he and I have vastly different skill sets. We have vastly different interests. The things that he does, I have no desire to do, and
right,
vice versa. So
that helps a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. So going back to the artistic side and the restaurant side that I grew up in, and he was a real estate, finance, private equity guy. So we both said, okay, we're going to have our silos and we're going to make decisions as a group, the two of us. So for example, a new project that we might be looking at, he's going to look at it purely from his standpoint and his silos. I'm going to look at it purely from mine. And if either one of us rule it out, then it's off the table.
Wow.
And we don't discuss it. We don't, you know, there's no, trying to convince the other one. It's just, I trust him. He trusts me. So that helps us a lot. I'm in charge of operations. I'm in charge of marketing. I'm in charge of brand creation. I'm in charge of the personnel and the training and the people development side. He's in charge of the finances, the legal, the HR, the stuff that I would have a seizure if I had to do for 5 minutes. But he loves it. He sits at his desk and he has 6 computer screens and that's his world and he loves it.
He's just a behind the scene guy.
He is. Yeah. He is. Yeah. And I think I open my computer maybe twice a month.
Right.
I'm from my phone and that's the way we live.
So you mentioned the hiring and people and stuff like that. And we don't talk a lot about that on the show at all, about employment, but I think it's something to kind of discuss, and I'd be interested in knowing with this, and especially in Texas, with our unemployment so low, struggles with finding the best people. I mean, what are you doing different? And because obviously the growth and everything else, you got to be finding the right people.
Yeah. So yeah. I will say this, our industry, the hospitality industry is the single most difficult thing for our industry and moving forward, that's going to be the biggest challenge for any operator in our space because it has such a high employee to revenue ratio. You know, a tech company can do $1 billion with 10 people working for them. We're the opposite. And so we need a lot of bodies. The other challenge that we face is most people in the industry don't look at it as their quote unquote real job. You know, they're doing it while they're in school or they're in between jobs, so they'll go wait tables.
Transitional move.
That's a lot of the workforce in the hospitality industry. That's not everybody. We have people that make great careers. Me is an example. But so we have both a high need for employees and the pool that we're looking for, people that are not necessarily going into it with this is their career choice. So you need to encourage buy-in. And that really ultimately is where the storytelling comes in, both from where we've been, but also where we're going. It helps success breed success. We've been successful, so that helps us attract the best talent in the industry. I would say I don't know how somebody that doesn't a business that doesn't do very well in sales, I don't know how they attract top level people. So we've been fortunate from that standpoint where we've, kind of been the hot, new, cool, busy place.
Absolutely.
And so people want to come work for us.
Okay.
And then our storytelling is such that they see that we're a growing, innovative company, and it's a lot of fun to work with us. We work hard, but we do like to enjoy ourselves too.
Yeah, it's just unbelievable to me from the side that we obviously work in, which is the higher level professional office individuals, and knowing how difficult it is, and then also knowing that this pool of people they call out there available. It's not a pool. It's not even a pond. It's more like a desert because it's just not out there. And so you really do have to steal from others that are looking for a better opportunity to come to work with something that is hip, is cool, is new. And
but do you worry about that if you're able to steal from somebody else, then that person maybe isn't, because where does loyalty lie, right?
Well, and that's the problem. And so that would make me think that probably, most likely in the hospitality industry, your turnover is going to be higher than what you'll see. But a lot of that is because they're transitional.
Sure.
And you're looking for that.
Yes.
It's kind of like the UPS and at Christmas time hires seasonal employees. And I almost think of the hospitality side as you have individuals that are long-term, that is their career. They do really well. This is what they do. Then you have people that kind of come and go.
Yeah, there is a true seasonal employee base in the hospitality industry, the summers and winter break, students that go to school. So that is a resource that we tap into as an industry quite a bit. But you do need your long-term stalwarts.
Right.
That, are always
there.
Well,
they're your base.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And they're the ones that also help to transition those new ones coming in to understand the way that you operate. It's your culture. And I'm sure each one of these businesses has a different type of a culture because they're attracting different sections.
Certainly.
The mutts are going to be a little bit different. Maybe they are than the rustic people. I don't know. But, it's different. They gotta like animals.
Well, yeah, right, I mean, there is a personality with each brand and each store, certainly.
Right.
I think the main common denominator is, do you have a sense of hospitality?
Right.
And I know that means a lot of different things. One of the things I'll tell you a quick story about our mission statement. My partner and I, we'd spent a year working on our business plan and our mission statement, all this stuff, and I wrote this beautiful, wordy mission statement that was like three paragraphs long, and it was poetry in my mind. And I was going through our store, one of our stores, and I was asking people what our mission statements was, and they looked at me like I was crazy, right? They had no idea what I was talking about. We have a mission statement, what do you know? And so I realized very early on that if we've got to change our mission statement so we can get a cohesive passion. And so my partner and I started whittling down our mission statement and rewriting it. We went from three paragraphs to one paragraph, and then one paragraph to a long sentence, and then a longer sentence to a half of a sentence. And we finally got it down to, I guess it was six words at the time. And at the time, it was our second to last iteration of our mission statement was create remarkable memories for our guests. And we said, we still can go further. So we eliminated for our guests. And so now our mission statement is create remarkable memories. And we took out for our guests because we wanted it to be about creating remarkable memories for each other, for our vendors, for the community, for just anybody that comes into contact with us. We want people to walk away with a remarkable memory. And now if you go into our stores, everybody can knows our mission statement by heart. And that's the first thing that we discuss when you get hired in orientation throughout training. It's what did you do to create a remarkable memory for somebody today? And so that's really the core of our culture. Mm-hmm. But then beyond that, yeah, personality takes over for each store, and each store kind of has its own identity, which is fun for me to travel between each store,
right,
and see the different personalities.
Well, I think what's really interesting about that is that it acknowledges that you're creating experiences for people that, you know, visit your restaurants and work in your establishments and that sort of thing. And what's also really cool to me, and I don't know if this was intentional or not, but you've paired food and something else, right? Like food and dogs, food and bowling, food
certainly,
and music,
yeah,
and that sort of thing. And kind of acknowledge that what people are looking for now more and more than ever is not just a good meal, but a good experience, a good time. You know, was that intentional right off the bat?
It was. So we were creating our brands really when the internet was starting to impact the F&B business. Mm-hmm. And we decided very early on that you need to be in one of two buckets. You either need to be in the experiential bucket or the convenience bucket.
Yeah.
Starbucks is a great example of the convenience bucket. They make it so easy. I don't know where everybody lives, but if you're driving to work, you're going to pass 10 Starbucks along the way. And
you can order on your phone.
And you can order on your phone. Yeah, exactly. You don't have to talk to anybody.
Oh my gosh,
so they've gone all in on experience. That's why they're winning in their category. We decided to go the other way and go experiential for a lot of reasons, but mainly that's just what we were excited about. We were more passionate about that. And so we started saying, okay, food and beverage is important, and it's the core of what we are. But what kind of experience can we offer around that? And we decided to tap into things that people were the experiential component. And more importantly, we wanted to tap into things that people were already passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
So people are passionate about their dogs.
Oh my God.
People are passionate about live music. People love sports and competition.
And so, we're passionate about our bowling in our company.
Do you get after it?
They actually are here too.
What's that?
Remember last time we were here, there were like multiple markets.
Oh, yeah. Here at Market Scale. Oh, they've got bowling leagues here. They're crazy.
Exactly.
They've got the shirts, but no, we're passionate about it too. And this is really a compliment to you guys. We have tried multiple times to bowl with you guys, and it's been booked. And so, when it's on the list again, and it's just a weird deal, but we really have.
Yeah,
we can name drop.
I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that. It's the we're so busy, nobody goes there anymore.
No. It's fantastic because it was like the top place everybody talked about.
Yeah,
and I think that's what it is. You want to have that experience. We're Frontline will never be a Starbucks name or a Tiffany's name. It's just not going to happen that way. But we can make that experience close to that.
Right.
And I think that's what you guys have done.
Now, why do you say Frontline won't be?
It's not going to be the name. It's not going to be a name.
Is it?
Because everybody thinks now it's a flea collar.
Is that industry specific?
We had that happen this weekend. It was so sad. We were at a fundraiser that we sponsored, and they had a comedian who was not funny get up and actually say, it sponsored the happy hour. And they said he wanted to thank the sponsor for the happy hour, Frontline. Said, I thought we were flea collars and. But if you need to get rid of what was the exact?
Blood-sucking employees.
Blood-sucking something other word employee. Call Frontline. And I thought,
jeez.
Oh, you just totally just stabbed me here.
Yeah.
So, but you can have an experience that goes with it.
Sure.
Know? And you can do things around it that differentiate.
Right.
In a way. And every one of your restaurants, if you have never been to one, if you have never had that experience, but you look at the website, you want to go. Because it differentiates just from that
idea. Well, I hope so thank
you. It does. No. Yeah. And if you haven't been and you go, and the first time you go, that experience is fulfilling because you know and realize, wow, it is what I thought it was going to be. First time I drove by Mutz in Clear Fork.
Yes.
I am not joking. I literally said, I want to go here.
It's happy.
It is very happy. Look, the dog, the design, the look, the feel. I want to go sit out there. I want to drink a beer and let my dogs go and run. Now I'm afraid I'm going to get in trouble because they're not going to get along with others. But it was one of those things that you said, that looks like a lot of fun. You can drive by the Rustic in Dallas and never go in. And every time you drive by, you're going, that place I'm sure is bopping on the weekends.
Yes.
And at night and every day. And it just has that feeling.
Yes.
And that to me says a lot more than you realize because – a person may not step in, but if they tell someone where to go when they're in town, that's because just driving by, they realize that.
Well, and not even like in town. Sorry to interrupt. Not even like just in town, but with social media. And that's what I was going to ask you too, is like, how do you feel like social media has impacted not only your businesses, mm-hmm. but like FOMO? I mean, anytime anyone posts that they're at the Rustic or at Mutz or anything, I'm like, oh my God, I want to be there. Like, why am I not there right now? And that has to be huge, especially for the demographic that you guys are appealing to with like the Rustic, with like music, depending on the age range. And then with Mutz too, 20-somethings and dogs are like their kids, right?
Yes.
Because that's the difference between like people who have children versus just having dogs.
No, because I'm just going to jump onto hers because I was going there also to understand, would this have happened if you had started this business 20 years ago without social media? Because that's what the way that people talk about where they're at and share all of that, would it have had that same type of impact as quick for you guys?
I mean, I think so. Now, I will say this. We took advantage of social media early on. I'm fortunate enough to be in an industry where social media works. You know, if I'm in the insurance business or I'm an accountant, that's pretty hard to get an interesting, engaging social media site.
Staffing.
Yeah. I'm working on it.
We're all working on it.
At least with staffing, there's some cool storytelling that can happen with the individuals and the companies. And, you know, if I'm in, you know, accounting, that's just HR, that's pretty hard, right? So we do benefit from that. But what also we're fighting against now is now everybody benefits from it, right? And we've all seen on social media the cute sign on the wall, like, you know, tequila is the soup of the day or whatever stupid thing that people, you know, put, or the neon sign or the, you know, so that's like, we're kind of overkill now, I think. So we're actually scaling back. We want to engage on social media, but we went early on to this whole, like, we wanted to have cutesy, you know, opportunities for people to take pictures in front of. And but it's so watered down now that we're going the other way and just trying to make it more about the experience.
Like everybody has a flower wall.
Yeah.
To take selfies.
Yeah, or that neon sign or something, you know, right? And so social media is obviously a big part of it, right? And the FOMO component, right?
Yeah.
I'm sitting at home by myself on my couch and all my friends are at the Rustic having a good time. I need to go.
Yeah.
But it also helps that we have brands that have dogs and live music and things like that. So it's not just a static, you know, post against a cute sign.
I just think, you know, when you think of like Mutts, and I'm going to go back to that just because of the dogs. 20 years ago, would it have been the same thing? You know, you could have had the location, but because of the fact that you can go out there with your dog and you share that and you're enjoying a beer and sitting outside, I think that just adds more to it where people are like, hey, I didn't even know this was here. I mean, there are still people in Fort Worth that don't realize that there's a Clear Fork outdoor mall with Neiman's and everything else down there. And so there's still today people we run into in Fort Worth will go, we have a mall? I didn't even know that. And you're like, yes, it's huge. Don't go there. It's already crowded. So, I mean, that to me is just an interesting part of it that it's really helped you guys to expand because I think the experience is what people are talking about.
It is. It is. So, yeah, I mean, we all live half of our lives now on our phones. And so if you can reach the consumer that way, that certainly helps.
Right. One thing I noticed on the Mutts thing, and I don't know how much you can talk about this or not, or if you don't even want to, we can cut it out. But they talked about franchising it.
Yes.
And that to me is really interesting. Can you elaborate
on that?
It's
interesting to me too.
Okay.
Yeah.
So two locations right now, and those are owned by you guys, or are those?
We own the two locations that are currently open, Dallas and Fort Worth. All of our other brands, they're going to be corporate owned stores. Mutts is a really interesting opportunity for us to grow through the franchise model for a couple of reasons. One, the startup costs. Are less than $1 million.
Very reasonable.
Which, you know, a Rustic is closer to $10 million to open. You know, so from a financial standpoint early on, it's a much more palatable franchisee model. But a couple other things that make it interesting to franchise. First and foremost, the building is a prefab building that we have built in Georgia. So when you find your site, if you're a franchisee, you find your site, you go online, you place the order for your building. It shows up in 6 weeks, takes about a week to hook up, and you're ready to go.
Wow.
There's no,
I love this
design. I mean, and these buildings come fully equipped with equipment and I mean, everything down to the paper towel holders are already on the walls. So there's not a lot to figure out.
True turnkey.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So from a simplicity of opening, it makes it a lot more user friendly. And then secondly, our operation is built around, it's membership based, which is great. And that's the majority of the revenue, but the F&B component is not super complex. And so we wanted to be something that was manageable. One of our investors is a guy named Todd Graves. He owns Raising Cane's, and just getting to know him and talking to him, he said one of the keys to his success in growing to 500 units and you know in about a decade was he said our training manual is about 3 pages long because it's fried chicken and French fries.
You're fine. So I look at all these ideas. I'm like, these are all like fantastic concepts. But obviously, you know, not all great ideas make it to be great restaurants and great, you know, profit building establishments and that sort of thing. What do you feel like was the key differentiator for you to go from great idea, inspiration, all the way through creation to, you know, now the full embodiment of what your vision was?
I think that ideas are vastly overrated. I think execution is the game and just going and making it happen. I mean, we can sit around this room and think of the next great ideas that are going to happen over the next decade. It's the difference is who's going to actually make it happen. You know, and you look in, especially in our space, but really in the industry, some of the brands that have just stood the test of time, it's not because their idea was so great. It was just because they execute better. And so that's really where we focus on. I mean, we like to have inventive, creative things and concepts, but it really, that's all fodder compared to the execution component. And I think that's where we've done well, is we just go and make it happen. I mean, a lot of, I've had so many people pitch me ideas. Hey, I've got the Uber for cheeseburgers or whatever. And it's like, that's cool. Make it happen. And nobody does.
Right.
You know?
Do you have a favorite? Well, one of these that's your favorite line?
A favorite?
One of these, one of your brands, the Rustic, or the Bull and Bear, or the Mutz. Is there one that stands out? That
do you have a favorite child?
Some days, yes,
like,
I
don't
do.
Don't ask me that question.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't tell my real favorite child. Yeah. No, I don't. Yeah. I mean, I love them all for different reasons. Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously, Bowl and Barrel is special because it was our first.
Exactly.
Mutz is special because if you go to Mutz and have a bad time, it's you're a bad person.
Right.
You know? and then Rustic is obviously the Rustic. It's been a lot of our success from a financial standpoint. The general public, which we haven't really touched on.
No, we haven't touched on. Talk about that.
So we have two general publics. That's our first and really our true restaurant and bar.
Right?
Yeah. It's an American gastropub. We have one in San Antonio, one in Houston. And that was interesting because it was really based off of what we saw going on in Dallas, where we opened Bowl and Barrel. We, like you pointed out, we are busy a lot of times and you have to make reservations early. And there was a bar that was open next to us and they were busy and it wasn't very good. They're not open anymore, so I feel comfortable talking about it. But I got to know the owner and I was like, where's your business coming from? Why are you guys busy? And he said, honestly, 50 to 60% of our business comes from you guys, because you guys are on a wait. People will go in, put their name at Bowl and Barrel. We're on a 2-hour wait. So they would go next door and eat and drink and hang out till their lane was ready. And so we decided, we were in the process of opening San Antonio and Houston Bowl and Barrels. And we were like, you know what, instead of feeding our neighbor, let's just be our neighbor. So we decided to take the space next to the Bowl and Barrels in each market and create our own brand and do what we felt was a better job. And so that was a kind of a fun project for us, because we just decided, let's just go do it ourselves.
Right.
And it ended up being really dang good.
Yeah.
So we love that concept.
That's funny.
Yeah.
I'm so impressed, Kyle. I just can't tell you. I'm really just an incredible story to hear. And I don't know. It just makes me want to go eat right now. And I don't know how you stay in good shape like this. And every time you turn around, you're in that eating food now.
I have the body for radio.
If there's anything that you could tell, like, yourself maybe 10 years ago, from all the lessons that you've learned thus far, what piece of advice would you give yourself?
That's a good question. I would say ultimately it's patience. I thought I was going to be able to buy the Dallas Cowboys by now. And
if
it
you
just,
would, that'd be great.
Well, I don't know. Yeah.
Do you know Mark Cuban?
I do. Not
you
well,
do,
but
no, okay.
I don't think he's in the market to sell, and I don't think I'm a qualified buyer. But, you know, I just think it's patience. It takes a long time to build a business. And, you know, we live in a world where you want it now and you want it fast, and it just doesn't happen fast. And I think that if you want to truly build something that can last, it takes time, and you have to stay patient and stay the course and not get discouraged when, you know, it's
stuff
been 2 years
out
and you haven't made money and you know that kind of thing. I mean, there have been so many times, even recently, where I'm like, I guess I'm going to start driving for Uber now, or I've got to, you know, get a
you could drive people to
route.
The Rustic.
Yeah, exactly.
You're like, hey guys, where are you going tonight? Yeah, we're headed to the Rustic.
Got a few suggestions for you.
So I think that's probably the biggest thing, is just patience. I mean, it takes time to build it, you know, and we don't always want to be patient.
No.
you know, we want to be rich and have a jet and, you know, have a fancy car right now.
Right now.
Because that's what everybody else on social media apparently
everybody
has.
Else does. Yeah.
You know.
So. You still work 60 hours a week?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, my schedule, I love my schedule because I'm in a business that really isn't traditional office hours. Right. You know, it's a lot of nights and weekends. And, you know, so it's very flexible from that standpoint. I hate the people that say, if you never work a day in your life, if you do what you love, you know, that kind of thing. It's somewhat true. It's still hard and there's a lot of stress. But I have a lot of fun doing it too. So I kind of, those lines between work and pleasure get blurred a lot.
You never lose the fun.
Yeah.
Fun is what, that makes it every day, no matter, as you said, the ups and downs. And we all have bad days and I always say tomorrow's another day. And
You
learn from it and you move on. And really, it's an incredible story. And it's just really an honor to
Chapter
have you.
Chapter one, hopefully.
I'm excited to see what comes next. And that, when I was reading about the Mutts and the franchise thing, I thought, now that is something that I could see is something that could go nationwide.
Well, that's another one of our goals. I mean, you know, we created that brand and that we created its own category is really what it did. Yeah. And we started seeing pretty quickly people trying in other markets trying to knock it off.
Right.
And so we were like, if we're going to go and, you know, be first to market, we can really only do this through the franchise.
It's simple. Model. And the name is perfect.
Yeah, it works. And that, you know, that was a tough thing. We just from a, I've learned a lot from a branding standpoint, how to brand, how to trademark, those types of things. And so, you know, moving forward, our new brands are going to be a lot more easily trademarkable.
Right.
It's hard to, it cost us a lot of money to be able to trademark Mutts.
I'm sure it did.
But we got it.
Yeah.
But it took us several years and a lot of money.
Yeah.
But yeah, Mutts, the franchise process has been interesting. It took us about a year and a half to get everything legally lined up to be able to sell in every. We're in 48 of the 50 states is where we can sell, that took us some time. But once we went live with it, which was a couple of months ago, it's really done well. We've already sold 11 units.
Wow.
In a few months.
That's fantastic.
So we're excited to get those online and get those going.
Scottsdale, Phoenix.
We're spending a lot of time in Scottsdale.
We may need to talk about
Phoenix.
That.
Tempe is an interesting market.
Yeah.
We're spending a lot of time in Colorado. For the Mutts brand, the Rustic brand, Bowl & Barrel, all of our brands. Our growth pattern is really we want good weather states. We want business-friendly states, and we want cities that have an NFL team. Those are the kind of qualifiers for us.
And the NFL team connection is?
We feel like if it's big enough for an NFL team, it's big enough for us.
I love it. There you go. There's the wisdom of all wisdom for opening a business, my friends, right there.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. Well, this has been a fascinating episode, and now I'm hungry. So
how many guests have you had? Would you say?
On our podcast?
Yeah.
I think this is number 12.
10. Yeah.
12?
Yeah.
Where do I rank?
Oh, this was pretty good.
Number one,
yeah,
hopefully.
It's going to be number one.
For sure.
Yeah. We're going to get a VIP pass to the Rustic. It's going to be number one, I'm telling you right now.
No, we're having our company party at Bowl & Barrel. Thank you.
We're having a Bowl & Barrel. I can tell you that next quarter for sure.
I know a guy.
No, it was very, very interesting. I mean, it just the way to build a business and how to do it is not an easy thing to do. And to be able to sit and talk about it now with that confidence and you can tell, I mean, you've been through the blood, sweat, and tears of it, is a huge accomplishment.
And Bill, as humble as he is, doesn't give himself enough credit. Where we have entrepreneurs on and business leaders and stuff in DFW, but he really has done it too.
Right. Yeah.
Which I think it's awesome because he gets to interview fellow business owners, entrepreneurs, leaders, stuff like that. And you're sitting right across from a guy
who
did it too, which is awesome.
You're very kind.
The legend.
I haven't. Yeah. I couldn't cook anything. Okay, I can barely bowl.
Oh,
as it is.
Okay, before we sign off, I want you to tell Bill about the potato. How much did you spend on that potato?
Oh, in Miami, yeah, at Pappy Steak. Have You're going to Miami soon, right?
Yep, we're going 3 weeks from now. We'll be there.
Yeah, so Pappy Steak. Now, it is hard. We're from Texas. We know our steakhouses. I don't get that excited about steakhouses in other
right.
markets usually. But I went to this steakhouse on a recommendation from a friend, and steak was good. The atmosphere was great. But this potato...
Okay.
It was a baked potato with caviar on it. And it was, I think it was $110 for a baked potato
for
or $105 or something. And my girlfriend is now still with me because of that. So,
okay.
So it was worth every penny. I mean, okay. She loved it. I loved it. It was outstanding. It was really
How
good.
Was the steak?
The steak was the potato.
The potato, okay. Potato.
Go with the potato. The steak was good. I mean, again, we're
was
from
this?
Texas. It's in Miami. It's
okay.
called Pappy Steak.
Okay. Going to have to check it out.
Yeah, it was good.
Going just for the potato.
That's right.
I love it. I love it.
Jeff Benjamin on a potato.
There we go. I'm going to walk in and I'm going to go, do you know Kyle? You know the potato?
Don't do that. Don't do
that. Well, this has been awesome. We'll be back soon with another episode. But until then, Bill.
Thanks, everybody. Check us out on Spotify and Apple Podcast, iTunes, what's it
yeah,
called?
Yeah, that's what they call it. Yeah.
I know. The link is on the website. Check
days.
It out. Yeah, the kids, they change it all the time.
Wherever you listen to podcasts.
It's everywhere. Check it out, guys.
Yeah, yeah. And we'll be back soon. But until then.
Thanks, everybody.
Produced by AutoVita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.